welcome back to Making It So. This is episode number 24, and we are covering off on Star Trek Discovery Season 5, Episode 2, Under Twin Moons. I'm your host, Craig, and my co-host, Maddie. How you going, buddy?
You got me back somehow.
Yeah. Oh, look. You're still sitting here?
Yeah.
You know, if you have obviously listened to the first episode that we've done of this season, Maddie and I managed to get hold of some screamers. Screamers.
Not touching that
one
at all.
I'm leaving that blooper in.
That's some low-hanging fruit right there.
Some screeners through Paramount Plus for the first four episodes of Discovery Season 5. So,
yeah.
Obviously, we don't want to give away any spoilers for people that haven't listened to it. This episode won't be released until it screens on TV. But before we go any further, if you haven't watched the episode, please go watch the episode now and then come back and listen to our thoughts on the episode. All right. So as I said, this episode is called Under Twin Moons. Because we have got this early, there is no synopsis on IMDb at this stage.
Yeah.
Is that a problem for us? Not really. I'm trying to go backwards.
No. And I guess if you're listening to this, the episode's already out, so you can look and have a look at the synopsis and... Or if you've already seen the episode, I guess the synopsis doesn't really matter.
Yeah, well, it's supposed to be coming out on April 4th, this one. So it's directed by Douglas Aronofsky.
Sure.
Aronofsky? Something like that.
you didn't do last week's one, did you?
No, I can if you want. let's find the director's name from last week's episode. The director's name was Olatunde Osanami.
Go for it.
I'm guessing, like... I probably absolutely butchered that person's name. I don't know if they're male or female. Looking at that name.
Or anywhere in between.
Anywhere in between. Douglas, I'm picking Douglas is a bloke, a man. But hey, who knows?
You never know.
Who knows? What?
Hey, like Michael said in this episode, the world is bigger than our own corner of it.
That's true. Very, very true.
Except she travels between worlds for a living.
Yeah.
So it's weird that she says world. Our world is bigger than our corner of it.
I'm like, yeah, but like an individual.
Our galaxy, our universe.
An individual person's world. Like, yeah.
Okay. But she didn't say her world. She said the world.
Okay, that's true.
The world is bigger than our own corner of it.
So this episode starts with Burnham giving a bit of a captain's log. I didn't really write down any information about her captain's log. The thing I did write down was the drone or the dot outside the hull. Outside her window, cleaning the sand off the hole from the previous episode.
I totally didn't see that.
Like, you could see, like, the big bits of sand that it was actually cleaning off the hole. I thought that was a nice little touch.
That's their closest way to be like, well, yeah, we did back out of the sand from last week. You just have to believe us. I have a disconnect with the dots because I just really didn't like them when they were in the past, quote-unquote past. That makes sense now, like, way, way in the future, but it was just, I didn't like them when they were existing in the Kirk era.
What do you think of, like, this... This ship has got its own AI, like I guess they all do to an extent, even in the 24th century. But this one seems way more sentient.
Yeah.
And it has been the whole time.
Doesn't it have to do with control and all that kind of stuff? I feel like it's almost a take to, they originally wanted to do this with Voyager. That's why Voyager had the bioneural gel packs.
Yep.
Originally it was going to be that it kind of developed its own personality and all that kind of stuff, almost like a Moya.
Well, I guess they ended up really doing that with the Doctor, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. They kind of let the whole bioneural gel pack thing slide and just let the ship be a ship and not be more like a living ship. I guess by the time there was that episode where it kind of got raped by that big space whale thing, I guess they're like, well, we probably don't want it to become sentient because it's probably going to have thoughts about that. And we don't want the ship weighing in on the whole Tuvix debacle. So, they just went, no, we won't worry about it. So, yeah, Zora, it's interesting, but...
Yeah, it's interesting anyway.
Yeah.
So, Raina and Michael were in trouble with the Federation president. She was not happy. Right. Raina, he's a bit of a loose unit. Yeah, he lives by his own rules, really, it seems. And I'm guessing that goes back to like him being out there sort of alone during the burn period, really, without so much oversight.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah,
I still don't quite understand him yet.
No, and I don't know if I like him or not at this point. I'm sort of like, is he just a dick for the sake of being a dick? or is that just who he is?
Yeah, I'm trying to find this balance between him. Like, is he a cowboy or is he a real stickler for the rules?
Yeah.
He seems to swing one to the other and have his own sort of rules and ethics and all that kind of thing. And I'm like, oh, how does a captain get that way? But like you said, you know, with the burn and all that kind of stuff, you kind of just go, oh, it's a new kind of Starfleet that's trying to rebuild itself. So I guess it's going to be all kinds and types.
And we got our first swear count for the season where Raina says shit.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
So obviously that we're in the streaming world now, I guess. Mm. You know, they can bring these things in, but you know, I know Maddie and I have mentioned it before on previous episodes of our podcast here making it. So, like, should they be swearing? I don't know. Like, is it okay? Like,
yeah,
in this, you know, I guess the burn was a bit of an apocalypse really for them to an extent. You know, is it more acceptable now?
For me, it is. For me, because it's, you know, the Federation and Starfleet were kind of nothing, you know.
Yeah.
They didn't really have any principles. They didn't stand for anything.
They're really trying to rebuild at this point still.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I guess, I don't know, maybe it's, and then it's my own personal thing too, I guess, fuck hits different to shit. And I also think it's also very much contextual as well. Like, it felt like a very offhanded comment to a friend kind of situation, the way Raina said it. It wasn't like he was on the bridge of his ship, you know, conversing with an alien adversary or whatever and, you know, yelling shit on the bridge to a, you know, to someone on the view screen or something like that. So this one, surprisingly to me even, I didn't bump into it too much with that one. I was like, oh, yeah. In my head, I kind of went, oh, yeah, that's right. We're in 2024 and Star Trek swears now. but it didn't, yeah, it didn't. I didn't bump it. I still think the worst one for me so far was that Admiral from season one of Picard just being like the sheer fucking hubris. I was like, it's just so unnecessary. So.
To me, it's not really distracting. I swear quite a bit. You know, it's just who I am. And you know, I guess that's a bit of our Australian culture too, really, to an extent. The working class culture here.
It didn't take me too much out of this one.
Seems like Book has joined the crew as well for as like a special advisor sort of a thing.
Now,
not a special advisor. Well, he is kind of a special advisor to the captain, isn't he?
Again, that I found really weird. There was a moment where the Admiral talks to Michael and asks if it's going to be a problem with Book being on Discovery. But last week, it was Michael that had to convince everybody to go and get Book, that he would be beneficial to the mission and he could help find where they are. And I know that, like, at the end of the last episode, they kind of broke up.
Yeah, it feels a bit like will they, won't they kind of be together type of thing.
And like I said, last week, I didn't buy them not talking to each other and growing apart and stuff like that. And I guess we don't know how long it's been, in a couple of months maybe. I don't know. Oh,
it feels like it's a little bit longer than that since... what was last season? It was the DMA, wasn't it? The Dark Matter Anomaly thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I reckon it's probably been a little bit longer than a couple of months.
But yeah, I just... For the bond we're supposed to believe these two have, I didn't buy them drifting apart. So then this of them kind of breaking up kind of thing, or taking a break, or I don't know what it was. It was very weird.
Two hard-headed people just not talking their problems through? I don't know.
But then does that mean the Admiral knows that they broke up and that's what he was asking about? Like, is it going to be a problem that's going to be on your ship?
Yeah.
It was weird. And that was, I think that's, and that's something sort of modern writing like this, something I bump into a lot. Last week, you know, Michael got swept away into the Infinity Room with the guy from Up. And obviously there was the big reveal at the end. This is the most highly classified secret in all of Starfleet. Not even the Admiral knows. Blah, 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 progenitors. Blah, 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 the chase. Blah, blah. In this episode, everybody knows about it. Mm. The entire crew knows about the progenitor thing.
I guess they've been read in.
Book knows about the progenitor. I was like, remember last week when it was like super, super duper top secret? And it's like...
I'm sitting here nodding my head.
Yeah. Captains can be read in on something and their crew not.
True.
That's a thing that happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
But just everyone knows about it now. Just Yeah, it's like just not classified. It's just like, okay, everyone knows. Even Tilly knew, and she's not even on the crew. Like, she knew.
Well, Tilly's kind of been asked to be part of the crew for a little bit, I guess.
It was weird. I don't know.
Like, she, I guess, you know, Tilly has a good relationship with Michael Burnham because they were roommates when, when Michael was, you know, a criminal.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, you obviously would have to deal with classified information in your line of work. It's like, just because you're friends with somebody doesn't mean you're telling them all the classified information.
Absolutely not.
They've got to be read in on it. So it's just like, yeah. I
think need to know principle is a thing.
Yeah. So I think, you know, given that these...
Not that I know anything. Thanks for listening, China.
Yeah. So I think obviously, you know, back in the 90s and the 2000s, it was all still like, you know, Gene was there for a lot of it before he passed. And so I think a lot of it was really kind of drilled into people that it's kind of, you know, his time working in the Navy, working on boats and stuff like that was kind of fed into the way the chain of command works. And I feel like, I don't know if any of the writers on some of these new shows actually have any military experience or have like a military advisor on the show or know how chains of command work or anything like that. But it's just like, oh, okay, well, the guy from Up told Michael and us, the audience, last week about this really...
Dr. Cronenberg.
He's always going to be the guy from Up. you know, told us, the audience, this really classified piece of information. So now everybody knows. It's just easier to keep track. Just everybody knows now. It's Even Book knows. It's fine. Everybody knows. Move on.
Yeah. Everybody, don't tell anybody. But shh.
Yeah.
We all know.
Yeah.
So Michael and Saru, they beam down to the planet, right?
This and they finally acknowledge Saru being number one. After him, we'll be getting like Mr. Saru last week.
The CG for this planet, though, was stunning.
Oh, like where they're on the cliff and it kind of
Yeah, it looked around. Awesome.
Yeah, it looked very, very cool.
The one thing I sort of really bump up against here is the captain and the first officer.
Correct.
Both beam down to what essentially could be something hugely dangerous.
Yeah.
Which does turn out to be hugely dangerous.
But it's Saru's last mission, guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's have some fun with, like, Saru.
There's not a chance that Commander Riker would have been allowing this to happen.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, it should have been Saru go down, but, you know, it seems like Michael Burnham has to be the front and center of every piece of action available.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Last week or last episode, she was surfing on top of that ship.
Yeah.
You know, like in a warp bubble. Like, you know, who does that? Now she's out on this planet.
Yeah, she's much more Kirk. She leads all the away missions.
Yeah, she has to. You know, she has to know and be a part of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that the sign of a good leader? Like, yes and no. Like, she's definitely leading from the front.
Mm.
But you've also, as a leader, you've got to know when to, you know, let your people do their job and not micromanage them on everything.
Yeah, and like who's commanding the bridge?
Yeah.
While she's not there. Like, it's still shit's happening.
A Woshikan? Is she?
Yeah, she's like a lieutenant commander now or something like that, isn't she? So
yeah, is she in charge up there now? Who knows?
I mean, we'd have to give her screen time to find out, and we can't do that. We can't give any of the little people screen time. How dare.
Like, honestly, I'm still like, but we're 5 seasons in now to Discovery, and I've watched every single episode, and I still don't know all of the bridge crew's names.
Nah.
Yeah, and is that on me? I don't know. Or have they just not concentrated on some of the characters as much?
No, they absolutely haven't. It's like, even if you know their names, then
what do we know about them?
What do you know about them? Yeah.
Like, you know, say, I will use Voyager as an example. Like, Voyager did episodes where they concentrated on, like, Harry Kim, for instance.
They did episodes where they concentrated on Samantha Wildman.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I know more about Joe Carey than I do about any of the bridge officers on Discovery. And he did...
I know more about Ensign Mulcahy.
Yeah.
He bumped his head on the ceiling.
Right, exactly. you know, Joe Carey only did, I think, about 7 episodes through the entire run of Voyager. And I know more about him than I do about any of these bridge officers.
Like,
who've been here since day 1.
Awoshikan Detmer?
Detmer's the poor man, 7 of 9.
Yep.
Then there's the red-headed 7 of 9. And then there's the two dudes, Bryce and Reese. And I don't know if those are their first names or last names.
So Reese is the tactical officer, isn't he?
I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure he's the Asian tactical officer dude.
I just know
that I think he's Asian.
There's the Asian guy and the black guy. Yeah. And they're Bryce and Reese. One's ops.
Yeah, Bryce is the one's black
one's
guy.
Tactical, one's ops, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if that's their first names, their last names.
And who's the other chick? The one that was Arium and now someone else.
Oh, Blondie McBlondface.
Yeah. Like,
sure, that one.
Like, I don't know, maybe we know more of their names than we thought. Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I did like while Saru and Michael were on the planet, I actually did enjoy their little back and forward, like the pun about the wedding and the grave circumstances, and there was just a little nice little back and forward and some wordplay there. And I think that really ties into the fact that Sonequa and Doug have, you know, they've been on this show from the start and they've developed a good rapport. So yeah, their comedic timing back and forward is quite good. Mm. And I quite enjoyed that moment between them.
Like, I know obviously Discovery's been going for 5 seasons now and people have probably spoken about it, but you and I really haven't had a chance to talk about it on, you know, the podcast because we haven't done Discovery before.
Mm.
Saru's walk, what do you think of the way he moves his arms?
Oh, the weird sort of
where
swish,
he goes side to side with his arms instead of forwards and backwards.
I don't mind it.
It's very different, isn't it?
Yeah. I feel like he's the only Kelpian that does it, though. I don't know, like, you know, we've met his sister. We met the crazy guy that was
that's a good idea.
Responsible for the burn and stuff like that. And I don't know if I've seen any other one do it. But I love Doug Jones. Like, he was one of the gentlemen in Buffy. Like, he's a great, like, he was Abe Sapien in the Hellboy movie.
Yep.
He was like, well, obviously he didn't do the voice. That was the guy from Frasier. But, yeah, no, he did the body for Abe. He's fantastic. He was in, what's the movie? Pan's Labyrinth, where he had like the creepy thing with the eyeballs on the hands.
Yeah, very cool actor.
He's a fantastic physical actor. So I like that he's brought that.
I do remember hearing or reading somewhere that he decided to do the arm thing himself and he was never told to do it.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. That would be him. So,
but Saru's got a nickname. Action Saru.
Yeah, that was a weird thing to throw in this late in the show.
Yeah, like, very cool. Like, apparently Saru can run extremely fast. We learned that this time.
Oh, yeah, he had, like, the Jedi run.
Yeah, it was like, I wasn't expecting him to be able to move that fast, but hey.
And different...
His little spiky things.
Yeah, has he always had those, or was that...
No,
again,
he's always
had
them.
This is for someone who, you know, knows the show better than I do. I remember he had, like, his threat ganglia.
Yeah, no, he's always had them.
And they got cut off or whatever. And did he get the spikes after he got rid of the threat ganglia?
I can't remember. He's always had the spikes, though, I thought.
Oh, yeah, I just forgot.
Anyway, so...
He's got a lot of things coming out of his head.
The statue that was, like, buried in the forest, it kind of gave me... It reminded me of... was it the thing coming out of the... Out of Earth in Eternals.
Oh, in the Eternals. What are they called? They're the... Eternals and the...
anyway.
Tiamat. His name's Tiamat.
Yeah, Tiamat. Yeah. It gave me those sort of vibes.
Yeah, with like the six eyes.
So is it an entire giant statue that's buried or is it just parts that are, you know, on the planet? I'm thinking it's...
I don't know, because it was made out of stone and it was like... And then at another point there was like a hand and then there was that joke about how they're like... They're hiding under the foot or whatever it was, or we're losing our footing or whatever. Yeah, so who knows? But I mean, it was still functional, obviously, in that all the little drones were coming out of the eyes.
Yeah, the eyes. They were little drones that were designed to go killing people as a security measure.
Yeah. Now, we were talking about it last week about, you know, I was mentioning how it's weird that, like, with the programmable matter and all those kind of things, there's kind of not a lot of peril because... At a moment's notice, you know, they can have an EVA suit around them. They can, you know, pull phasers out of their butt.
Have they got, like, individual shields as well?
Well, that was going to be my question is, like, this episode would be a perfect moment for if they had, like, personal shields, that would be fantastic. So it's weird that they don't because I think it's just for a writing thing. They're like, oh, now they're suddenly not invincible. But also there was the big deal made about, you know, Saru was going to make potentially the sacrifice play by being the distraction. So he's like, here, take my phaser. And then he runs off unarmed. And you're like, oh no, he's going to get hit by one of the drones, blah, 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 blah. And then Michael's got to use them and overload them and throw them into the thing to make bombs to destroy the drones.
Good old overloading of the phaser.
Yeah. And then they do all that. And then like, whew, cool, we're safe. And then they both go, bloop, and they've both got phasers again.
Yeah. So this is something Maddie and I spoke about before we actually started recording. Mm. Like, do they have... Is that just an extension of the personal transporters where they transported another phaser down from the ship? Or is it a replicator that's built into their suit? I don't know.
Well, I think it's got to be
like... where does the matter come from?
Yes. Is it like... is it like an Under Armour of programmable matter? Do they run out of it? Because it's like, wasn't when they were under fire, the ship couldn't beam them back up because they couldn't get a lock on them because of the electromagnetic field or whatever.
But now...
But then they can just pull phasers out of their butts whenever they want them.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a weird thing.
It was cool.
Yeah, it looks cool. I mean, it's the same if you look too closely into like, you know... Infinity War, and it's like Tony Stark's entire suit made out of nanotech comes out of just that little tiny thing that's on his chest.
Yeah, the chest device thing.
So
yeah.
It's like, well, where does all that come from? So, yeah, it's one of those things that you kind of just have to blink over it. And we just, you know, it's funny that we're kind of having issues with that, but it's like, you know, as kids watching, you know, the 2370s era, we're like, yeah, of course, replicators make 100% sense. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's just an extension of transporter technology.
Matter conversion technology, so of course. Yeah. Makes total sense.
No problem with that.
Yeah. So wild.
So, yeah, I'm like, Saru running super fast, that sort of, yeah, that threw me a lot. But then Saru got shot in the arm as well, which, that wasn't a problem. Like,
it was interesting, like, for a split moment, because his, like, the armor stuff, like, their away mission costumes they wear, his, like, the lighting on his shoulder was blipping. And I was like, is that intentional or is that just like a suit,
is that to say that he's injured maybe?
I don't know, because I was like, is it a prop failure or is it intentional?
I didn't actually notice.
You get to the next scene and that shoulder is still blinking in and out. So it's like, yeah, it's like his armor and his suit has been damaged or whatever. So I think it was intentional.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, so yeah, I don't know. It was weird. But I did like all the puzzle stuff. Like figuring out the puzzle and translating the riddle and it's gonna be under the stone and you know all that kind of stuff. That stuff I really enjoyed.
Yeah, so it really now seems like this season, at least the first half of it, I'm guessing the arc is going to be trying to find like all the parts to this map, I'm guessing.
Yeah, yeah. It was a little convenient that it's like really, Michael didn't do anything that whole away mission because it was Saru's little eye flash that brought to his attention you had to change the light spectrum to see the things. And then it was his strength that allowed him to move
that obelisk thing. Yeah,
all that kind of stuff. So it's like he kind of was the MVP for all that kind of stuff. If it had just been Michael, say Michael and Tilly had gone down there, then they would have just been like fumbling around for quite a while longer. So he was kind of the MVP for that. And yeah, I didn't know that he had the ability with the weird, like the way his eyes flashed. And he went, oh, you need to shift the electromagnetic spectrum for blah, 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 or whatever it was.
I do like towards the end of the episode as well, actually, where Michael said to the crew that they had to go down to the planet and like fix things up as well. Like that to repair the damage that was done. I don't know if you remember that happening.
No,
so they had to repair the damage that was done to like the ruins and stuff. I thought that was cool.
I feel like that's kind of on the fact that, you know, if it's the planet's fault that they have drones that are blowing up stone as long as like, yeah, is that really our problem to fix that?
I thought it was a little bit convenient as well that how they had the drawing that was in the book.
Yeah.
And then when they replicated it with the programmable matter, they made the physical thing, how it was exactly the right size.
Yeah, exactly for the right scale. Yeah,
for that block thing to fit into that they found.
Yeah.
I thought that was very convenient.
Oh, absolutely. And of course,
it did look very familiar though, that drawing. It like I swear I've seen it somewhere before.
Okay, no, it didn't stand out to me at all. What I thought was convenient is the whole, book nose mole.
Yeah, because he called them on the dark comms.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, I recognize her.
Yeah. Well, I recognize her, and I'm still trying to figure out where I recognize her from. Like, so the actress's name was Eve Harlow. Let's have a look on her IMDb. And
no, she was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and she was in The 100. She's also been in something else.
She's got a very distinctive look about her too, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm just like, what has she? Yeah, so The 100, she was in that. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., as you said, next. I never heard of that one. What else was she in? Oh, The Night Agent. Ah, that's where I've seen her.
Ooh, that doesn't sound familiar.
Have you not seen The Night Agent?
No.
Oh, very, very good show. So, yeah, just a very quick synopsis of that. So, he's a FBI agent that basically fucked up, and he ends up being put as a night agent on a phone sitting in the basement of the White House in this room where the phone essentially never rings, and it rings one night, and she plays one of the bad guys. In that. Right. That's where I've seen her. Now I know.
What, is that a movie or a film?
TV. Netflix TV. Show.
Right.
Yeah, it seems like it's a one and done sort of a season, but yeah, it's definitely left open for a second one. And she was in SEAL Team as well. Okay. Yeah, I could have seen her in that. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm about, you know, the whole her, what is it? The previous.
So the
Booker, what is.
Yeah, so essentially she was. Cleveland Book the Fourth's daughter, I think. Was it the fourth? Which would make, as Book said, basically makes her his only living relative, like after the DMA went through and wiped out his planet and killed everyone he knew.
So, is Cleveland Booker a name or a title?
Good question.
Would that make him, her, his half-sister? Or, like, is Cleveland Booker the Fourth his biological father, or does his people not look at it that way? Because I know they're all connected via their little forehead pimples.
And I'm
stuff
sure
like
that they've mentioned this before.
You know,
I'm sure they did. They would have mentioned it last season. And look, I didn't do my research and didn't go back and rewatch the last season.
No.
I kind of want to now, like, because what I've seen so far of this season, maybe it's opened my eyes a little bit more to Discovery. Maybe. I don't know, and because I kind of went in after the first season of Discovery. And the Klingons that they showed in that, it kind of ruined it for me.
Yeah.
A little bit. And I was just like, what have they done? And I sort of got hypercritical of it. So maybe I need to sort of look past it a little bit and maybe open my eyes and open my heart a bit more to it.
Maybe in like a decade I could see myself maybe jumping back to like season 3. Because season 2 was Red Angel. And I ain't fucking with that shit ever again. not even Ethan Peck's. Spock is getting me back, and he's not getting me back there. Because I feel like season 3 was when they first traveled to the future, right? Because the end of season 2 was when they,
because last season being season 4, they were dealing with the DMA and they were already in the 32nd century,
right? Yeah, so season 3 was the burn,
Oh,
that hurts though. When I hear about the burn, I just go, oh.
Yeah, that was not a very good arc of a season. I didn't like that at all.
Yeah, so I don't know if I could go back.
Ugh, it is what it is. It's been done. Season 5, it kind of feels like it's redeeming Discovery, but hey, it's last season, so.
Yeah, there was the whole, like, you know, obviously once, you know, they succeed in their mission, blah-de-blah-de-blah. Saru's taken his position as an ambassador now, where he's got to resign his commission to become an ambassador and blah, blah, blah. There's this big, long goodbye between Michael and Saru. And they kind of, like, it felt a little bit manipulative in that. It felt like the writers were trying to, like, give them this big emotional goodbye, like they were never going to see each other again. And it's like, as I'm watching, I'm going, well, of course they're going to see each other again. No one's dying.
No.
He's going to be working on the starbase, I think, where she has to go back to at the end of every mission.
Yeah, like Federation or Starfleet headquarters.
Yeah. So I'm just like, what are we doing? Like, you guys should have been on the same ship anyway when you both made captain. That was weird. It's been weird. So I was taken out. I'm sure it was a lovely, sentimental conversation they had. But I was just like, oh my God, what else is boring? Can we move on? We know they're going to have a conversation with each other next week. It's not going to be a problem. We're going to see both of them next week. So as a viewer, I'm just like, I don't care.
What did you think of the set of Saru's quarters?
I've always loved that.
Yeah.
Like the mist coming down and like...
And the plants and stuff everywhere.
He just
and
sleeps on a big mound of dirt with grass on
yeah.
it, you know. Yeah, no, it's always been a really interesting visual.
For a character that always looks super clean as well to like live in a
yeah, when you,
pile
when
of
you,
dirt.
When you look at Kelpians, you don't naturally think of them as being... something connected to nature as much as they are.
Yeah, they just very much
they,
are.
They look, I don't know, somewhat aquatic, but then also somewhat sort of reptilian and sort of you just, and yeah, very clean and very pale and their skin looks, you know, almost semi-translucent. Like they, looks like they don't see a lot of sunlight. They don't spend a lot of time in, so you don't think of them as being part of, being that sort of closely,
it looks like his face can open up more, like because it's got like those big crevices.
Well,
and
I
stuff
mean, he had
it.
His threat ganglia, he's got his angry ganglia. Yeah, they kind of do that fake sort of crease thing to make his mouth look like it's bigger than it is. So,
if you actually look, you can see like his human mouth underneath.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Can you imagine if that had been done in the 90s? Like, it would have looked so much worse.
Oh, it would have looked terrible.
Yeah.
I like Saru as a character, though.
Yeah, no, he's quite interesting.
He's engaging, and it's just something very different about him.
Yeah, very unique character. It's not something we've seen before.
Like obviously, yeah, until the first season of Discovery, we'd never even seen his species before.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
So, yeah, are they something that sort of disappears out of the Federation for a while? I don't know.
Yeah, I can't remember because they were like... They were under the thumb of someone else.
Mm.
And
yeah, they were very much like a prey species,
yeah,
weren't
in
they?
In the Mirror Universe, they were getting eaten. Their threat ganglia like tasted good, and but then there was, I mean, obviously they survived because like there was that weird guy, the weird Kelpian that was responsible for the burn,
yeah,
you know, and stuff like that. So I like Saru, but it's like I don't want to go back because it's like what I watch isn't going to give me what I need or what I want from the Kelpians and Saru as a species. I'm just like, it's like I said, this season is I think an improvement in quality, but I think if I go back, I'm just going to be reminded of how low quality the previous seasons have been. So I'm just kind of just appreciating what I have at the moment.
Yeah. Either way, like, yeah, look, I'm liking it. And now, you know, Michael wants Raina to be her number one now that Saru's leaving.
My God.
So
another
captain under a captain.
Yeah. The chain of command on Discovery is so
it's
acoustic.
It's been a bit of a mess, hasn't it?
So acoustic. I just don't. I don't get it.
It's and like, how's it going to work?
Yeah. It was like, this is a sci-fi show where last week she was surfing on a starship.
Why don't they make her a fleet captain? Then this would solve all these bloody problems.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just...
Or a Commodore.
It's just a weird thing. Like, I we're watching science fiction and it's some seriously unbelievable stuff. Like I said, she was, you know, surfing on a starship last week. But at no point do I believe she would ever actually want him as a first officer, except for the fact that he has a... They hired him as a regular for this season. And he's going to be the new first officer and Saru's being put off the ship. And I'm just like, which I mean, it's fine. Like, you know, Saru doesn't deserve to be demoted. I'm assuming the captain will get demoted because surely we can't have two captains. And he was like being forced into retirement. So maybe he was either had to retire as a captain or take a demotion to be a commander to continue serving. So, but yeah, I don't like it. He doesn't belong, but it's going to introduce some conflict to the show, so I get it.
The actor that plays Raina, he's actually been in quite a few things that I've seen as well.
Oh, really?
Like,
he didn't look familiar to
me
does
look. He did look familiar, and now that I'm looking through the IMDb as we're doing this, it makes sense. So the actor's name is Callum Keith Rennie. He's an Englishman, as you can probably tell. But he was also... I've not seen this, but he's been in Umbrella Academy. That seems to be quite a popular show.
I've seen that. Who's he playing that?
Lester Pocket. For 6 episodes.
Oh, I don't know that name.
He was in Jessica Jones.
Oh, I've seen that too.
For 6 episodes, being Dr. Carl Malice.
I don't remember any of these.
He was in 50 Shades Freed.
I don't think I watched that.
Jigsaw.
No.
Goon, Last of the Enforcers.
No.
The Man in the High Castle.
No.
Longmire.
Oh, I've heard of that show, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, he was also in...
It's the Katie Sackhoff show.
The Legends of Tomorrow.
Ugh, no.
In the first 50 Shades of Grey movie. He was in Transporter. Yeah, he's been in quite a few things that I've seen. He was in Californication as well. CSI Miami is a couple episodes. Battlestar Galactica, The Plan. Ah, yes. That's where we've seen him.
I haven't seen that in a million years.
Lieben Conway.
Leoban
Conway.
Oh, he's one of the, spoiler alert,
yes.
He's one of the Cylons. He's like,
yes.
He's like number one or whatever it is.
Yep.
Oh, it's Leoban.
As soon as I saw that, bang, I'm like, yep, all right.
I exactly
know where I've seen him before.
Okay.
So, Matty and I both love the reimagined Battlestar Galactica series.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
He was also in 24. Shout out to Mitch. Mitch loves 24. So do I. Wow, he's... That's just one it for me, Battlestar Galactica. He was in that. You know.
Yeah, I had no idea.
He was in Smallville as well. Blade Trinity.
All right, wrap it up.
Yeah, he's been in heaps of stuff. Very cool. Anyway, so now, as I said, Michael wants him to be her number one and he accepts. Yeah. I really didn't see him accepting it, to be honest. He seems like he just wants to be like his own man and...
Yeah, it doesn't seem true to any of those characters that she would want him, that he would accept, and that even that the Admiralty would be like, sure.
Maybe she thinks she can fix him.
Maybe. She does have a line about why, but I did buy it, yeah. So I didn't. I did commit it to memory.
Look, overall, that episode I did like as well. Wasn't a massive amount to really pick on in that episode either. It's starting their journey really to find the progenitors.
I enjoyed all the stuff on the planet, the solving the puzzles and all that kind of stuff. Aside from, you know, the technology issues with me not knowing enough about programmable matter, but it was fine. It didn't make me roll my eyes or groan or anything like that, like so many episodes of Discovery do. So. Yeah, doesn't suck yet.
Yeah, it is Discovery redeeming itself. We're two episodes in and Maddie and I aren't hating it.
How are they going to go a full Enterprise and be like their last season is actually
is going to be the best, yeah. Except for the last episode of Enterprise.
Yeah, that's true.
Holiday program. Anyway.
I think someone did make a joke about that. Because I think maybe Frakes directs the finale or something like that.
Yeah,
or,
look, is Trip dead? I just want to... Maybe Trip didn't die. Maybe it was just a shitty hit holodeck program. I don't know.
Well, I mean, by the timeline they're in now, he's definitely dead.
Yeah, definitely now.
But no, I think someone made a joke about, did Frakes and Marina Sirtis do a cameo in the finale of Discovery and find out it was a holodeck program the whole time?
We've got 8 more episodes to find out.
It's time for it to happen.
All right, Maddie, where can we find you on socials, mate?
At High Pitch Maddie, HIGI. Nah, at High Pitch Maddie.
You got it right in the last episode and we hadn't done it for 6 months.
Nah.
Anyway, and you can find myself on Instagram and Facebook at Geek in Camo. All right, until next week when we watch a disco Star Trek Discovery Season 5 Episode 3, which is called Janal.
I'm still calling it STD for now.
Okay, STDs. Is it one of those pussy STDs? Bye. Get into geek.